Now let us talk about fat a little. We know all about carbs. We know we want to lower modern carbs in our diet. What about fat? Many of you already figured this out. You divide up your diet into carbs, fats, and protein. If we change the percentage of any of them, we change the other percentages. If we lower the carbs, we raise the protein and fats. So if we eat a low-fat diet, we have a high-carb diet. I will go ahead and spoil the surprise about protein. Protein will amount to about 20 to 40% of your calories. Fat will probably be about the same, around 30 to 40%. Since we want to stick to the 25 to 35% carb level in the modern diet, we have divvied up the rest between protein and fat. It ends up people usually do not feel as well on a very high protein diet. So in real life, this hangs around 35%. In contrast, man seems to like fats. Let's review fat a little. The fat we eat is normally in the form of triglycerides. These are three fatty acids connected to a glycerol molecule. You break down the triglycerides into fatty acids and absorb these. These can be absorbed by the cells of the body and used for energy. The fat cells can take these fatty acids and turn them back into triglycerides for storage, or back into fatty acids for energy use. Fat is used for all kinds of things other than just energy, and you need fat. Your body can make its own. Except there are two you cannot make and must get in your diet. These are alpha-linoleic acid, which is an omega-3 fatty acid, and linoleic acid, which is an omega-6 fatty acids. More about this later in the chapter. We eat the triglyceride. Lipase breaks it down into fatty acids. We absorb the fatty acids and recombine them into triglycerides, then package them into chylomicrons, which the lymphatic system then dumps into the blood. The chylomicrons are then transported around to be used. Triglycerides cannot be absorbed by the cell directly and must be broken down locally by the cells so the fatty acids can be absorbed. Many of you have had a triglyceride test, and you know that you must be fasting because after you eat, these chylomicrons get dumped into the bloodstream and your triglyceride level is going to be elevated. We will find out later that all of these triglycerides do not come directly from fat in your diet. Like many things in this book, it revolves around diabetes also. I've been bad-mouthing fructose for quite a while, and you will now see why I'm doing that. Well, not really will now see it. It'll be a little while before I get to it. But I'll give you a hint. Fructose elevates your triglyceride level. When fasting, we eventually start using fatty acids for energy. Fat cannot be turned into sugar, but the glycerol molecule connecting them can be used along with the proteins to make a little glucose when you are fasting. Remember, the fat cell takes in glucose and makes fat, but cannot go in the other direction and turn fat into glucose. Okay, now, most of you are saying, what does this have to do with the maintenance diet? Are you just making stuff up to fill in the pages? I can see why you think that. Unlike sugar and protein, nobody goes out and buys a chunk of fat for dinner. There are three areas regarding fat that I find leads to confusion and frustration. These are cholesterol, omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids, and saturated and unsaturated fat. I need to give you some information, as a food engineer is going to be the local expert on this and needs to know about it to wisely buy food. I remember when the engineers hated to have to take physics classes, but a little bit is necessary. So try to stay awake while we go through this. First, a cautionary tale. The low-fat diet. In the early part of the 20th century, we figured out people were dying from heart attacks more than other things. With the invention of antibiotics and monosanitation, infectious disease dropped and now they live long enough to die from heart problems. As you begin to understand the modern diet, more of them probably would have begun dying from heart attacks anyway. When we did autopsies of these people, we found their arteries were narrowed by substances beneath the blood vessels that contained cholesterol. We kind of figured out that if we ate less cholesterol, maybe we would have fewer heart attacks. The government got involved, and for the next 70 years, you were bombarded with propaganda about the evils of cholesterol. Not only that, the medical profession jumped in with both feet and told everyone to eat a low-fat diet. You are now smart enough to realize that a low-fat diet means a high-carb diet. This one program was probably the major factor in the epidemic of obesity and diabetes, along with the changes in carbs from processing. Even to this day, the low-fat diet is still being promulgated. The story of heart attacks is more complicated than that. Most of the cholesterol in your body is made by you. If you eat less cholesterol, your body makes more. If you were fasting, you would expect your cholesterol level to drop dramatically. Sometimes it does not change at all. You would think this campaign would not have been started without clinical studies showing its benefit. Well, none were really done. The ones that were done could not show much benefit. As more and more studies were done, the benefits of a low-fat diet were called into question. At the same time, type 2 diabetes and obesity rates were rising. Of course, the government blamed that on you for not exercising enough. This filtered down through the medical profession, so now the most common recommendation is eat less and exercise more. The government is backing off a little on the low-fat diet, but it is too entrenched to let it go. I have to be a little careful because I get riled up thinking about this. We want a maintenance diet. This is not a low-fat diet or a high-fat diet. I really would rather you do not have to count anything, and I don't believe, for the big majority of people, you need to count cholesterol. There are a tiny number of people who have an hereditary high cholesterol, just like there are a small number of people who have type 1 diabetes, who require somewhat specialized treatment. But this book is for the large majority who want some advice on maintaining good health. The ketogenic diet is a weight loss diet that is high fat and high protein. It is not a maintenance diet, and the benefits of losing weight probably outweigh any risk you may incur for the short time you are on this diet. You then have to go on to the maintenance diet, which may be the lower-carb maintenance diet, depending on your situation. The government will eventually take over your health care and give you many recommendations or requirements regarding what you should do. Please use your common sense. I have no doubt this will be fertile ground for more books, if I am allowed to write them. Let's take care of the cholesterol part of this chapter. Unless you are special, pay no attention to them as part of your maintenance diet. I will put an addendum at the end of the book on lipoproteins, so you can read about that, but hardly anyone does. The subject of statins, which ties into cholesterol, is complicated and requires its own book. Statins may lower the incidence of repeat heart attacks compared to those who have had a heart attack and do not take statins. Statins may lower the cholesterol level in these people. I am not sure that lowering cholesterol is the way it keeps people from having repeat heart attacks, and many other people don't think that either. Statins inhibit the first step in your making your own cholesterol, but it also inhibits several other pathways. It may be that some of the other pathways are more important than just the cholesterol pathway in statins' usefulness. I do not like to take chronic medications, but am not a therapeutic nihilist. If you have diabetes, you may have to take insulin. Diet can help and perhaps prevent it, but high blood sugar all the time is much worse for your health than insulin. If you have high cholesterol, the proper diet, which is not a low fat, may help. If you have hereditary high cholesterol, that is a birth defect and treatment will help. And if you have had a heart attack, statins may prevent another, whether you have high cholesterol or not. I am interested in a maintenance diet which I hope will prevent or ameliorate the diseases that keep you from being healthy, at least my definition of health, which, remember, is the ability to work, function, enjoy life, and be content, but not necessarily to live longer. In our modern life, we may live slightly longer, but in poor health. Enough about cholesterol. I am going to move on to saturated and unsaturated fats and save the omegas till last. A fatty acid is a long chain of carbon atoms between 4 and 28. It's always an even number. Some of you may remember from chemistry class that the carbon atom can bond with 4 other atoms. In fatty acids, 2 of the bonds are usually with other carbon atoms, hence the chain, and 2 of the bonds are with carbon atoms to make 4. Sometimes you can skip one of the hydrogen bonds and have just a double bond with the neighboring carbon atom, or maybe some other type of atom. If there are any double bonds with other carbon atoms, we call this an unsaturated fatty acid, or unsaturated fat. If all the carbons have single bonds with the other carbon atoms, we call this a saturated fatty acid. Short-chain fatty acids have 5 or fewer carbon atoms. The fiber in your diet, that stuff made from glucose molecules bonded together in such a way that we do not have the enzyme to separate them, is digested in the colon. I know I told you we do not digest them, but the microbes in the colon, that is the gut biome, do digest them and release short-chain fatty acids that are used for the colon cells. I guess we should really count them as carbs, but traditionally we don't. So I am going along with the crowd, since these are not really sugars, but fat. I don't think there are any short-chained triglycerides. The more I study the gut biome, the more important this process appears to be. It is also linked with the epigenetic changes in the colon. I will have to write another book, but this is almost more complicated than diabetes. Now, the difference between saturated and unsaturated fatty acids. If you are a fatty acid and do not have any double bonds, then you are saturated. If you have one or more double bonds, then you are unsaturated. If your third carbon from the end has a double bond, then you are an omega-3 fatty acid. If you have more than one double bond, then you are polyunsaturated. For those of you who took organic chemistry, remember, one end of a fatty acid contains the COOH complex, which makes it an acid. The other end contains a hydrogen. When I say omega-3, that means we are counting from the hydrogen end, and this is the third carbon from the hydrogen end. Sometimes people number the carbons from the COOH end. But in nutrition, we're numbering from the hydrogen end, which is called the omega end. Most of the fat we eat have both types, although one may predominate. Coconut and dairy products have more saturated. Olive oil, canola oil, and peanut oil have more unsaturated. Meats mostly around half and half. Avocado only unsaturated, or mostly. Saturated fats raise your cholesterol level. If you substitute unsaturated fats for saturated fat in your diet, you may not raise it quite as much. If you lower your total fat intake, you may or may not lower your cholesterol. We now circle back to cholesterol and the low-fat diet. Once the government believed we had to lower everyone's cholesterol level, so we pushed the low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet. At this point, we were not even sure if this lowered your cardiac risk. The government also pushed for a greater proportion of unsaturated fats versus saturated fats. Again, no real proof that this was good for you at all. In fact, the opposite may be true, and unsaturated fats may increase your risk for other health problems, such as cancer. As technology advanced, we were able to divide cholesterol into various types. It turns out HDL cholesterol, raised by eating saturated fats, may be protective of cardiac disease. It turns out that more unsaturated fats may increase other health risks. Turns out we can further divide the types of cholesterol. LDL, the so-called bad cholesterol, can be divided into light fluffy and small dense types. The light fluffy may help reduce cardiac risk. The small dense may increase it. So we have the situation that elevated cholesterol may or may not increase risk. Some types of elevated cholesterol may be protective, and some types of LDL may be protective. As we are getting smarter and smarter, we can further subdivide these particles more and more. Currently, lipoprotein A is the popular subdivision. You can read my addendum on lipoproteins, but eventually I'm going to quit mentioning all the different subdivisions. This is mainly due to recommending what type of treatment to take or if you do need treatment. Again, I'm trying to prevent these diseases to start with. If you have heart disease, that's an accumulation of problems over the previous 30 years, and I'm hoping to put you on a maintenance diet that will prevent you ending up at this place. I'm not trying to figure out which statin you should be on. When we look at clinical trials, it seems that even lowering your fat intake for 30 years may only extend your life for about 6 months, if that. There is simply no good clinical evidence that a low-fat diet will be of great benefit. There is evidence that a high-carb diet may not be good for you. If I look to history, I found that it seems that most fat in the diet came from animals or olive trees. Of course, there was a time when no animals were eaten at all, and most fat came from plants. Overall, it seems that for the last few thousand years, fat intake is about half saturated and half unsaturated. Fat from dairy in the form of cheese seems to have a long history. It was a valuable way to preserve food along with grains, dried legumes, and salted and smoked meats. I have not discussed alcohol in the book, but wine seemed to have been made from the get-go and was another way in which calories were preserved. You cannot have a civilization without the ability to preserve food. How does all of this help the food engineer? You are going to buy fat in the form of oil, plants, dairy, and meats. I do not think you should pay much attention to the saturated-unsaturated argument. I do think you should stick to natural foods. The fat you eat in meat depends on what the animal eats. Same with dairy and poultry, that is, eggs. Look to where the food came from to determine if that is what you want to buy. It is more important to determine the source of the fat rather than the proportion of your diet, whether it is saturated or not. Eat a good diet and forget about cholesterol. Okay, one disclaimer. I am assuming you are using your common sense. If you have a genetic defect manifesting itself in abnormally high cholesterol, things may be different for you. Please use your common sense. Also remember, I may not be a real doctor, and do not consider what I say to be medical advice. I am now going to talk about omega fatty acids. This is a subject no one really cared about since they were classified about 90 years ago. No one spoke about these until about 10 years ago. Now I am forced to at least give you the basics so you can understand what is going on. This is going to involve a lot of definitions and abbreviations, and maybe a little chemistry. I would like to just forget this section, but the modern diet has brought some of these issues to the forefront. In animals, fatty acids are either obtained for the diet or manufactured by the liver, adipose tissue, or mammary glands, that is, during lactation. In the diet, they can come from plants or animals. Fatty acids are made from carbohydrates and elements of other fatty acids. Fatty acids are either stored as triglycerides or transported in the blood bound to albumin. Cells absorb fatty acids and use them to make other things or for energy. Fatty acids are acids, which means they have that COOH atoms on one end of the molecule. At the other end is an H or hydrogen, and an omega-3 or any number means a double bond between carbons, starting with the third carbon from the hydrogen end, which is the omega end. We are going to talk about omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. This means the double bond starts at the 3 or the 6 carbon atom. But there may be several double bonds, usually every other carbon. This means we call them polyunsaturated. Saturated means no double bond, unsaturated means at least one, poly means at least two. Now we have a little biochemical lingo. This is where most people start falling asleep. Stay awake for the next 5 minutes. We have two essential fatty acids, meaning fatty acids that we cannot manufacture from scratch and hence must obtain from our diet. These are linoleic acid, otherwise abbreviated LA. This is an omega-6 fatty acid and is polyunsaturated. It has 18 carbons. The other essential fatty acid is alpha-linolenic acid, or ALA. This is an omega-3 fatty acid, and it is polyunsaturated and also has 18 carbons. Since these are obtained only from our diet, what we eat affects the balance between omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids in our body. Omega-3 fatty acids and omega-6 fatty acids act as competing substrates for the same enzyme. Hence, their ratio affects many aspects of homeostasis in our body, and this ratio is affected by our dietary intake of these essential fatty acids. Of particular interest to us is its effect on inflammation, and possibly on its role in the rising incidence over the last 75 years of autoimmune disease. I believe the rising incidence of autoimmune disease, obesity, and diabetes may be tied directly to the modern diet. Hence, that is why I'm going to go through the trouble of explaining this to the food engineer who has the role of determining the food in the diet. Omega-6 prostaglandins and leukotrienes are involved in the inflammatory process in arthritis, vascular disease, arteriosclerosis, autoimmune disease, and tumor proliferation. Competitive interactions with the omega-3 fatty acids affect the generation of these inflammatory molecules. We need both, but if the ratio of the two is skewed too much, we are going to get more of one or the other than is historically normal. We have the yin and the yang, the balance between omega-3 and omega-6. A couple more definitions so you can understand the info in this area. The yin is arachidonic acid, or AA, a 20-carbon polyunsaturated omega-6 fatty acid. This fatty acid is the basis for the arachidonic acid cascade, multiple signaling paths that are involved in inflammation, cell growth, and the central nervous system. Most AA comes from dietary linoleic acid, LA, which comes from seeds, nuts, vegetable oils, and animal fats, the same place most of our fats come from. The yang is eicosapentaenoic acid, or EPA, a 20-carbon polyunsaturated omega-3 fatty acid. This fatty acid is the basis of a competing cascade to the AA cascade. This is manufactured from alpha-linolenic acid, ALA, and dietary sources include oily fish, various algae, human breast milk. EPA is not found in plants. Docosahexaenoic acid, or DHA, is a 22-carbon polyunsaturated omega-3 fatty acid. This fatty acid is the most abundant omega-3 fatty acid in the brain and retina, and its deficiency is associated with cognitive decline. Its dietary source is the same as EPA. The body manufactures DHA from EPA, so the levels of EPA directly affect the levels of DHA. At this point, I should tell you, nobody really pronounces these acids. They refer to them by their initials, EPA and DHA, And in fact, this is what you will see on numerous bottles of omega-3 supplements. Remember, DHA is made from EPA, and they are both omega-3 fatty acids. It appears that the ratio of omega-6 versus omega-3 fatty acids in most of history was about 2 to 4 to 1. I'm sure this varied depending on the diet, but this is the right ballpark. The ratio in the modern American diet is now 12 to 25 to 1. As we discuss, this throws the ratio off in your body and indeed may affect the yin-yang of the inflammatory cascade. How did we end up like this? Back to cholesterol and the low-fat diet. Cholesterol was deemed to be evil, and we had to get it lower by eating less fat, and therefore more carbs, and lowering the amount of saturated fats in the diet. One way this was accomplished was by switching over to vegetable oils, which contained a higher percentage of polyunsaturated fatty acids, those being linoleic acid, which is an omega-6. And these vegetable oils were higher in LA than the traditional oils. The main historical vegetable oil is olive oil. I know it's really a fruit, but we're going to call it a vegetable, which is low in linoleic acid. The main vegetable oil now is soybean oil, which is high in linoleic acid. U.S. soybean production has increased by about 900% in the last 80 years. Human consumption of soil was essentially about zero 100 years ago. Now, if you start looking at the ingredients of the food you buy, it's in almost everything. Not everything, but quite a lot. I think I am on solid ground saying we are consuming more soybean oil than at any other time in human history. It was easier to jack up the linoleic acid availability and consumption. Make saturated oils evil, and you can see how the omega-6, omega-3 ratio can go up so rapidly in the modern diet. As I said before, the ratio may be more important than the actual amount. Easy to get more omega-6, not so easy to get more omega-3s. Now we are being told we need to take omega-3 supplements. Despite mankind never even hearing about omega-3s till a few years ago, perhaps the real problem is too many omega-6s. Modern man has greatly increased the food supply in the world. The soybean supply, most all now GMO, has been able to supply oil and protein at a lower cost, so that now soybean oil is used all over our food supply and used as feed in our meat supply, both cattle, chickens, pork, and fish. The use of animal fat as a source of oil has been demonized and fallen in use, especially compared to the diet of man for the last 4,000 years. How does this affect the maintenance diet? Try to decrease the amount of soybean oil. I know you won't be able to get it to zero, but at least lower it. We use oil. Try to up the olive oil or avocado oil consumption. I personally disagree with the thinking that omega-6 oils are good for you and we need to take extra omega-3s. Omega-6 oil is not necessarily bad for you, but the elevated omega-6, omega-3 ratio is. Perhaps we should consider just eating less omega-6 rather than buying supplements. I do not mind eating oily fish. In fact, I like it. But it may be more effective to decrease omega-6 than increasing omega-3. Maybe we can change the saturated-unsaturated fat ratio. It's not an easy job to be the food engineer. You do not have to be perfect, but use the principles that we have talked about to guide your purchases. Okay, basically, this was a review of cholesterol, omega-6 and omega-3s, and saturated-unsaturated. For those of you interested, there's a lot more information available, almost all of it somewhat confusing and some of it contradictory. I have said this numerous times, but I'm looking more about the diet over the last 5,000 years and comparing it to today's. 3,500 years ago, a man's life was said to be between 70 and 80 years, the same as it is today. Only today that is only possible through the medical genius that has been developed in the last 100 years. Even then, our life is plagued by numerous disabilities. Even after all this time, we have not achieved more health in the modern diet. Let me briefly remind you that one of the reasons I produce these podcasts is to get you to buy my book, Diet and Health. This podcast is actually a combination of two chapters in this book. The podcast can be purchased in written form via an ebook, although it seems most people are getting these for free anyway. The second half of the podcast concerns proteins, and it is not nearly as long as the first half of this podcast. I will continue addressing the food engineer. Today's chapter is protein engineers. Most of us intuitively know what proteins are. If it is not a fat or carbohydrate, it is probably a protein. We recognize it as meat. We also know it is often associated with fat. Plants have protein, it is just not as recognizable. Think about wheat, which contains mainly starch, but also fat, that is oil, and protein in the germ. Proteins are made of amino acid and contain the COOH group like the fatty acids, but it also contains an NH2 or nitrogen group. The unit of protein is the amino acid, like the unit of fat, the fatty acid. Proteins are chains of amino acids, sometimes very long and complicated chains. Enzyme and enzyme receptors are generally proteins. Proteins are the largest component of your body, other than water. You eat protein, it gets broken down into amino acids. These are absorbed and used to make things, or turn into sugar, or turn into fat. When you stop eating, much of the glucose in your body is made from protein, after your glycogen is gone, of course. That is why you can fast for a year and still have glucose in your blood. Remember, your fat cells can turn glucose into fat, but not the other direction. When you completely digest sugar or fat, you end up with carbon dioxide and water. If you wonder where the weight goes when you are dieting, you are breathing or urinating it out. Some is lost in the evaporation of sweat. When you digest protein, you end up with a urea group, which is then dissolved into water and escapes in the urine. This is where the nitrogen goes. If you don't urinate, the nitrogen, in the form of ammonia, builds up in your body and can lead to brain injury and death. When we measure the BUN, or blood urea nitrogen, we are measuring the urea in the blood, and if it is elevated, that means you are not excreting the nitrogen. If you are clever, you can make gunpowder from urine. There are 20 different amino acids that you use to make the proteins in your body. Like fatty acids, 9 amino acids are essential, meaning your body cannot make them and you must obtain them from your diet. The minimum intake of protein is about 2 to 3 ounces. In the United States, if you weigh over 450 pounds, you can take in no protein for a year and still not be protein deficient. Of course, you will get smaller, but that is often the point of fasting for a long time. If you ask how can that be, then you didn't read about the Angus diet. You metabolize the protein in your body. If you are losing weight and thus getting smaller, you recycle that protein, including those essential amino acids. If you are a meat eater, most of your protein intake comes in the form of muscle, that is meat, from various animals. At this point, let me remind you of something you've probably figured out. When you eat any kind of meat, you are usually reaping the benefits of the energy the animal exerted in making that protein. The energy generally came from plants of some kind. The plants converted sunlight into starch. The animal ate the starch and converted carbs into protein and fat. then we eat the animal and receive energy-dense nutrients. What the animal eats affects the quality of the protein we eat. If the animal is eating toxic waste, we receive some of the toxic waste when we eat the animal. The food engineer is buying the protein. It may be wise to spend a little effort figuring out what that animal ate. The best example and most common is grass-fed beef. I'm sure by now you all have seen that in a supermarket. In the good old days, cattle grazed on the land. You had to store up something in the winter to feed them, as they couldn't graze. Historically, this was usually hay, which contained starch, fat, and protein, just like grain. You could just feed them grain. A farmer can raise much more wheat than he could eat. You could harvest the wheat and store it as preserved food, as has been done throughout the history of man. You could mill this wheat and eat mainly bread during the winter, or you could feed the grain to animals, harvest them during the winter, and have a varied diet. You are essentially preserving the food in the animal. This seemed to work great for thousands of years. In the last couple hundred years, we started finishing cattle. What that meant was that when the grass died in the winter and we had to start feeding them, we fed them a higher protein, fat, and starch diet. We got more fat in the meat. More fat in the meat was more attractive to the customers, as they perceived it tasted better. As a matter of economics, if grain and corn were cheap, we made more money turning it into more expensive steak. Also, cattle are sold by the pound, so if we were able to put more weight on the cow over the winter, it was worth more when we sold it the next year. All this was just a matter of economics, and if feed was in surplus, thus the price lower, we made more money buying cheap feed and selling expensive meat. Of course, this didn't work at all if the feed was expensive, but since the development of the capitalistic system, man optimized his work product. The same can be said for chickens, eggs, pork, or even farm-raised fish. We can make more money if we feed them cheap food, which the animals convert into more expensive meat, or eggs, or even dairy products. We all know that the milk, cream, butter, or cheese taste depends on what the cow ate. To some extent, so does its nutritional content. So far, it makes sense that what the animal ate affects the final product. So what? For many years, we just looked at the meat, or eggs, or milk, and if it looked okay and tasted okay, we bought and ate it. If it had a lot of fat in it, that meant the farmer fed it well, and hence probably took pretty good care of it because his profit depended on the final product. We really did not worry about what the animal ate. This system worked great for thousands of years. If grain or corn was cheap because the weather was great and everybody grew a lot, the excess was fed to animals and marketed that way. If the weather was bad, the animals had to eat grass or hay, things that man could not eat. If man was eating well, the animals were eating well. Back to the beginning of the book. Something has changed, mainly in the diet but not all, in modern times to make us fat. Not only make us fat, but increase the incidence of diabetes, cancer, autoimmune disease, and maybe mental health problems. I am concentrating on the diet. What happened in the last 75 years or so to our protein? The elevation of the general standard of living in the U.S. has enabled more people to get meat. If man has the option, he likes to eat meat. Poor people were stuck with carbohydrates. With the invention of dwarf wheat, wheat production around the world has increased, and this was a big factor in reducing global starvation. It also meant that we had a lot more wheat, hence it became cheaper. Now it was worthwhile to buy extra grain, feed it to animals, and sell the meat. This was driven by economics and the desire to earn more money. Nothing nefarious about that. Now, most of the beef was fed higher caloric food to increase both the weight and fat content of the meat. There was still some figuring the rancher had to do to maximize the profit, but they got good at doing it. Most of the beef we buy has been finished. Let's look at grains again for a moment. We agree grains have been grown since the beginning, milled somewhat, and eaten as bread or sometimes like oatmeal. Right now, we claim there are about 7 main ancient grains. There were 7 because there were diverse climates and lands, and one grain did not fit at all. Today, as a result of crossbreeding, there are 1 or 2 prominent grains that are used based upon their increased production and potential to sell to the consumer. Grains are turned into flour and eaten in many products. Modern grain is not the same as the grains eaten for thousands of years. It has a different nutritional content than the ancient grains. In general, ancient grains contained more omega-3 fatty acids. Now we see a trend in the modern diet. Increased soybean production, used as oil and soybean meal and feed, increased intake of omega-6, and a lower intake of omega-3. The omega-6-omega-3 ratio getting larger, and thus more medical problems. So it is not only the fats in our diet, but also our meat that is contributing to this trend. Although the example I used was grass-fed beef, the same applies to chickens, pork, and fish. If you feed them a diet elevated in omega-6 fatty acids, you get meat and eggs higher in omega-6. Similarly, if omega-3 gets lower, the ratio gets higher. Back to where we started. Your meat is related to what the animal ate. Not only what it ate, but what it was given, like antibiotics, vaccines, supplements. All are given to increase yield and profit. I am not saying these are all bad, but the modern diet has done us harm, and these processes are part of the modern diet. Corn and soybean are the primary food used to finish cattle. Virtually all corn and soybean are GMO products. Both have high omega-6 to omega-3 ratios. Guess what the meat has? Omega-3 supplements are made and sold, even by prescription. I am not a big believer in supplements. Your body was created to function without them. At the same time, we must use our common sense. We can modify our modern diet somewhat and make good food choices, but we can't go back thousands of years and eat what they ate, even if we stick to a vegetarian diet. I do not think omega-3 supplements can treat any particular disease. I do think a lower omega-6 to omega-3 ratio may help prevent disease. You can just eat less omega-6 and more omega-3, but that's not easy. Somehow, we managed to survive since creation without omega-3 supplements, but then again, we were not eating soybean or feeding it to our animals. At this point, I admit I do not know what the answer is. That is, should we take omega-3 supplements or not? You have common sense, and many of you are smarter than I am. If I figure it out, I will let you know. In the meantime, look at the label. Figure out what organic means. Figure out where the animal food came from, and spend a little more money. I will give you a little more advice in the chapter on graduate studies for food engineers, but for most of us, this is enough. By the way, both soybean and corn oil are highly processed, as we can observe in the supermarket by just looking at the label. Much of the food we buy is processed in the modern diet with the addition of various chemicals and preservatives. In general, try to eat the least processed food you can. A lot of what I'm teaching you requires a little knowledge and a lot of common sense. The food engineer is going to be shopping for food around 10,000 times in the next 20 or 30 years. With a little guidance, she is going to get very good at it. It will never be perfect, and we're going to eat finished beef at times, and we're going to eat soybean oil at times. But we're going to try to decrease the amount we eat. We'll be cognizant of omega-3 fatty acids and try to get those foods that may be a little higher. But I think by lowering the omega-6s and raising the omega-3s a bit, that you will be much better off. I don't think that taking omega-3 supplements will hurt you, other in the wallet. But if you're going to do that, look at them carefully and consider the sources. And of course, you can always Google it. I warned you earlier I was going to continue to talk to the food engineers, and I am. Everyone else is certainly welcome to listen in. This podcast is available at episode 13 in the podcast Diet and Health. But as I said, I really prefer you just buy the big book Diet and Health, that being the paperback version.